We move on to the deep dive segment. This is obviously a segment where we look into either a sector, we look into a stock, we look into a trend. I thought for this one, let's get a tech expert in because we've been having this raging Mac, Dell debate, Android, Apple. And I know a really good tech guy, right? Muriwa Gavaza, economist, tech guy, tech junkie, everything in between. Thanks for joining us, bro.
Thank you so much, guys.
Cool, welcome.
Tech stocks, where do we start?
Okay, cool. So I think there's a lot that's, you know, happening in the sector. But one of the things that I wanted to bring to light, a little bit of, you know, my own book here, is something that we looked into this week with the Financial Mail, right? It's a simple question to say there's a lot of noise that your telecoms operators and there's this fight happening between your tech guys and your telecoms operators. And it's simply this. As telecoms operators, we want to be able to charge kind of like a toll fee to the tech guys for use of our infrastructure, which is the network, right? If a network is like a highway, then you as the tech operators help us to maintain this infrastructure that you've benefited from, right? Think think WhatsApp, FaceTime, all of those, Netflix.
Mm. I can only stream Netflix because Toko spent a fortune
on the networks, right? So we did a little bit of a piece because obviously right now GNU is happening right now, and you know we're now saying what are going to be the policy pushes, and this is one of the things that we decided. Okay, you know this might be something to look at. We've got Shimi from Vodacom, Ralph from MTN, and Serame from Telkom, all the big guys talking about the fact that it would be nice if you guys chipped in to this thing, right? And the reason why it's also big is because globally, last year, 20 of the biggest operators in Europe, including Vodacom's parent, that's Vodafone, they pen a letter to the EU to say, guys, can you guys make these guys pay us for this thing?
It's interesting that you mentioned those big names and you left out George Mendes at Celsi. And that's because George sold his infrastructure business. And yes. I had that conversation with him. I remember we had dinner at some point and I said, but why do you then sell this? And he says, I don't need the physical infrastructure to be a telecoms provider, right? So I understand where the telcos are coming from, but at the same time, George took a business decision to say, I'm not going to make as much money from this infrastructure business, therefore let me exit the business. Saram is doing exactly the same by selling SwiftNet. So why then do you want to come back and cry, oh, but you guys are benefiting? You as the company, as a Vodacom, invested in that infrastructure.
Yeah.
You did it. You benefited from it. You are the largest infrastructure holder or whatever it is. Why then now should other players then have to pay you for things so that you can recoup that investment? Because you've earned from it as well.
Because that infrastructure is expensive and never ending.
Yes.
That's fair.
Isn't that one of their problems? That
it's a huge one.
You know, 3G was exciting and then you roll it and as soon as you finished, like 4G. Mm.
Yeah. 5G now.
Now we're busy rolling.
Now 5G. We're on 6G.
And I've already heard, there's just that never ending churn of upgrade.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, if we're going to bring it back to a conversation around investment and that type of thing, is the fact that how you rate a stock depends in large part on what is that business spending its capex on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or what is the structure of capex to OPEX, what is the cost structure?
And what is the return on that capital deployment?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're a telco in the current environment, as what Simon is saying, and you're spending all of these amounts of money,
and you're not getting anything
from an investor point of view, that is always a piece that you're thinking about that, if I put my money into this company, I know hands down, these guys are going to be spending billions every year. If it's not upgrading us from 3G to 4G in the South African context, it's diesel.
You went there.
Burn.
You
make diesel. A point there. If I'm ShopRite and I'm spending a billion a year on capex, I'm getting stores and trucks I'm getting more income from
it.
If I'm Vodacom and I'm spending a billion, I mean, I just get faster speed and maybe I use a little bit more data.
But I can't justify a significant increase to my end user.
My return on investment is that the problem they run into?
That's part of the problem that they run into. But I think the other one is the fact that, especially when you've got operations their size, it's just the infrastructure gap that's at play. And the other place is the fact that your big internet players, as much as we're talking about this, they do recognize that they need to be contributing to the pie, which is why you've seen Meta investing in undersea cables along the east coast of Africa. You've seen Google doing it on the western side of Africa, if I remember correctly. So there's Equiano, there's Two Africa. Those are two cables that the two companies have spent $1 billion on. Amazon
Uncle Johan's not going to be happy about this, guys.
Seacom.
Uncle Johan's
exactly,
not going
to. Seacom is old.
He's not. Right. But when I remember there was a time where you mentioned the undersea cables, where we had problems with connectivity. I think it was on the eastern side and all of the traffic had to be routed to the western side. And Seacom made a killing. It was during the pandemic. It was like a 2 week period. But it illustrates the importance, as you said, of the infrastructure, I suppose, that underpins everything in a globally connected world.
It used to only be that Telkom cable. Was it SAT-3 with Telkom
cable? Yeah, one
cable?
Of those, yeah.
And that went down and like, there was no other cable.
Mm.
Like,
exactly.
It was a horror show.
Yeah. And I think if we're going to talk about it from a global markets point of view, right, you've got probably one of the biggest internet players who's entered the infrastructure game is Elon Musk with Starlink.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And that's a business that if you're to look back at history, he will likely look to list that business at some point. And it's going to come at a crazy valuation because of, you know, all the stuff that he's done specifically on that.
If you look at what he's doing with Starlink, and I like that we get to move into the international space around tech stocks as well, is he's not a mad rocket scientist just shooting things into space, because his plan, and even if this is just a rumor around his plan, it's a well thought through plan to have Starlink satellites linking to Tesla's, where you've got the data that the Tesla collects being uploaded to the Starlink, effectively creating a connected ecosystem that has only ever been done once in history. And this is the first and last time you'll hear me acknowledge it here, is by Apple, right?
Yeah.
The connectivity and that kind of seamless integration is the model he's putting in place for Starlink and Tesla and the X.com platform. And at the end of the day, when that is complete, it'll be very difficult to rival.
Exactly. And one of the reasons why I brought up, you know, Starlink is because of the point that you just made now around the fact that, you know, he's creating this ecosystem. And it's also because when you look at global tech right now, the thing that's driving global tech right now is AI, right? Mm. And if NVIDIA is anything to go by, the hardware behind that AI.
The hardware behind the information.
Yeah. Then underneath that, you then look at your cloud providers, your data center guys. There's infrastructure that's sitting underneath
below
all of
those
these things.
Cloud guys or the satellite guys, which is where he's gone right to the end.
Right to the end, yeah.
From the satellite point of view, we will then have the satellite that your cloud service can sit on that will allow your security business to sit on or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that service will then interconnect with a Tesla or with whatever else he decides to come up with. So he doesn't seem like the crazy scientist who's shooting rockets into the moon without a
he's
plan.
He's all of those things. He's just also got a plan. Does the EU accede to this agreement? Because I remember a couple of years ago, there was this debate in America, the likes of T-Mobile and the others were like, hey, hang on, we want our cut. I mean, does the EU turn back to the telcos and say, you've got a good argument here?
Right now, at least from one of the papers that was published in 2022, I believe, by the regulator, that's the nice thing about the EU. You can just go to one body.
I know.
And they will, they either give you an opinion or they don't.
Yes,
whereas in Africa, if you're MTN, you're fighting maybe 18 different regulators. Oh. If you're Vodacom, 10 or so, depending. Is that they said, actually, we think that your cost of infrastructure is being covered quite a bit on both the consumer side and also on the, I think they spoke about the ISP side. You know, there's that. Then there's almost an overlap, a little bit of an overlap with an issue that, you know, caused a lot of furore a couple of years ago called net neutrality.
Yes.
And the basic idea is if you're an internet provider or an internet player pays for, I guess, this upkeep, are we now going to start preferencing the people that are paying the most?
Well, if you have the ANC lead that, they'll tell you, no, distribution doesn't work that way. But that's Eskom.
But also in the US, that's become a very political point.
Yeah.
Lena Khan, every time you get a new chair of the SEC, I forget which one it is, they flip from whether it's Title II or Title I. The US is crazy.
Yeah.
I want to quickly look at tech stocks in China. You and I have had this conversation to say China is exceptionally undervalued. It is outperforming its US counterparts, but you cannot ignore the regulatory or the political interference by the Chinese Communist Party. And that is dampering that sector more than anything else could drive it negatively. It's the fear of involvement, the fear of meddling. If I'm going to go put my money into Alibaba and then Alibaba's going to get fined and they're not going to be able to meet their KPIs or their targets or whatever, what's the state of China at the moment?
The state of China, it's the ultimate game of, I'm trying to think, maybe blackjack is a good one.
Okay.
Right? Because you sort of have to guess what the next card is going to be, or else you strike out. And that has seemed to be the game that's being played in China. You have almost have to be reading into tea leaves, right? Literally. I remember earlier in this year, there was sort of an innocuous line or paragraph that was taken down from one of the Chinese regulation websites.
Yeah.
Literally a paragraph taken out, and that sent Tencent share prices up because you've got a government that is not telling you what's happening, but you've got people that are just sitting and waiting for any, you know, type of sign, any type of movement. And it was around gaming and the type of restrictions that they were putting on gaming
revenue
and in-game purchases and all of that stuff. So they had taken out a line, and that line would have preferenced the gaming companies, Tencent being the biggest gaming company in the world, and it sent share price.
Yeah, but at the same time, as you say that, I think about the time where it sent the share price in the opposite direction,
yes,
when they imposed that restriction in the first place to say, we're going to put a cap on how much
but
you
I
can
think,
make in revenue. And the Tencent share price, I think in that day, was 10% down.
If you listen to what Xi Jinping said after he won his new term in October, and he talked around, because common prosperity was at the heart of much of this, right? And the whole gaming and education crackdown and all of that. And he basically implied, he said that a lot of, you know, that it's largely done. And in other words, maybe there's some fiddling on the side. To your point, subsequent to that, we did see something get put up and then disappear off a website in China. But at the end of the day, you can buy Amazon at a 41 PE forward, 9.5 price to book, or Alibaba at an 18 forward PE and a 1.4 price to book. I mean, I know that there's risk, but are you not being compensated for that risk?
That's why markets exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why they price the way they do, is there's always going to be different levels of risk and there's always going to be different levels of compensation. And I hate saying
Sorry, my bad. Forward PE of 9.5 on Alibaba.
I hate saying this, but we have run out of time for the segment. I wish we had more time, but we're definitely going to have Madhua back in the future. Thanks for joining us, Rob. Thanks for coming through. Yeah, that's all we have time for.